My dad would go to every game. The first thing I'd do when I got to the ballpark is put Pete Rose Sr. 4 passes. And he'd go to the game, and he'd never stay after the game because he had to get home, he had to go to work. And this one particular night, I come out of the dress room, and he's out by my car. And I'm thinking, oh, is my mom sick or something? What's going on? So I come up to my car, and I said, what's up, Dad? And he says, let me ask you a question. I said, what's that? He said, you know that second time up tonight when you had a man on third and 2 outs and you hit that ball to the second baseman? I said, yeah. He said, did you run hard to first? And I thought back, and I said, because I was mad because I didn't get a hit, and it was a good pitch to hit. And I said, no, I didn't. He says, well, don't embarrass me. This is my town, and I taught you better. You run, and when you hit the ball, you run to the guy. He says, out or safe. He said, I'll see you tomorrow. And he was right, and I understood what he meant. That's the kind of dad you had. And he's watching me that close to know I didn't run hard on that at bat. And that's the way I was raised my whole life in sports, you know, to do it the right way.
Pete Rose's drive and determination on the playing field cannot be questioned, and the stats he accumulated over a career that spans 24 seasons certainly prove that. 17 times an All-Star, a 3-time batting champ, and a record 4,256 hits. But his actions off the field cast severe doubt on his integrity. As is all too well noted, gambling got him banished from baseball in 1989, a punishment that has stood to this day and has also kept him ineligible for the Hall of Fame. Rose's latest request for reinstatement to the commissioner's office on March 16th may be his best chance yet for a reprieve. I spoke recently with Terry Lukemire, a Cincinnati native and director of 4192, The Crowning of the Hit King, a documentary released in 2010 that abstains from the long scrutinized chapter of Pete Rose's life, which has now lasted nearly 26 years. Now, what stands out to everyone who watches your documentary, which was released in 2010, is that there is no mention of what took place since Pete Rose's banishment from baseball in 1989 due to gambling. What was the reason for taking that angle instead of going for a more all-encompassing look at his life?
Yeah, it was a couple things. Probably about 6 years before then, I got an argument with a friend who is a big Pete hater. And I had kind of made a challenge. I said, you know, I've been making a couple films here and there, and one day I'm going to raise the money. I'm going to make a documentary for Pete's career and kind of show why we care so much about, you know, somebody that broke Rule 21. And then that came about. I had done a basketball documentary, and then I felt like I could tackle this story. And I talked to Pete about it, and I really didn't, because I thought it was kind of overdone. You know, I'd already seen Hustle, and, you know, it had been 20-something years or whatever. But I don't think Pete at the time was wanting to revisit that, because he had kind of been, you know, I don't think Hustle was very flattering or very, you know, he had a bad experience. And I don't think he would have done the film anyway. So I guess essentially the long way about the answer is it was just something that didn't really interest me. I just wanted to, you know, remind people why we cared about this one-of-a-kind player.
As someone who grew up in Cincinnati watching those legendary teams of the 1970s, did you see it as also as a project in which you could somewhat represent the fan base that wanted a retelling of a story to a generation today that probably only knows the negative aspects?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a whole generation of people that missed out on that because they only, you know, I think when you hear constantly just that one side of it, I think it's easy to assume, like, oh, you know, how good was he, blah, blah, blah. And again, like you just said, I grew up here, a huge Big Red Machine fan. I started playing baseball in 74 when I was 7. And so they were right there as my heroes. Joe Morgan was my guy at second base. And ironically, I wanted to do a Big Red Machine documentary first. And I was having a little trouble finding funding on that one. And then the 25th anniversary of him, you know, being Ty Cobb, was coming up. And I said, well, I'm going to do this one first. So I still had desires to do a bigger machine, but yeah, you're pretty much exactly what
Now, Pete Rose wasn't called Charlie Hustle for nothing, establishing that hard-nosed style of play right from the start of his big league career in 1963, and which, as was pointed out in the film, really started with his father enforcing a strong work ethic toward him.
Yeah, you know, what's funny about that is, even, you know, when you make a documentary, I still do a lot of outlining and research. You know, a lot of documentaries are just kind of, you know, let's gather a bunch of stuff and put it together, but I had kind of known that I wanted to go around the bases like you see in the film, but I was going to start at his rookie year. And the first night that I'm interviewing him, I realized, wow, how much, you know, his father's influence was. I hadn't really known about that. I'd done all the research, but I didn't get that until I talked to him. And then the movie changed because of it. I was like, yeah, I've got to start from the beginning because his dad just instilled that hard-nosed, you know, work ethic in there that you were just talking about.
As you just mentioned a few minutes ago, the Big Red Machine teams were part of four World Series during the 1970s, won back-to-back titles in 75 and 76. They had, as you said, Joe Morgan at second base, Johnny Bench at catcher, Tony Perez, George Foster, Ken Griffey, among others. But it was Rose, a Cincinnati native, who really stood out among the rest in terms of popularity, and still does. So looking back at what you can recall from your youth, was it simply that blue-collar attitude that made him not only appealing to the fan base, but relatable as well?
I think a lot of that, and I'll kind of touch on that a little bit more, but it's kind of funny. That's a good question because I know that Pete would always tell me, he goes, you know, Johnny Bench, he goes, Johnny just gets a little aggravated with things here in Cincinnati and everything. And I keep telling him, you know, I grew up here. I'm a Cincinnati native. And he's from Oklahoma, you know, and I said, well, that makes sense. I mean, Johnny's obviously, I believe he's the greatest pitcher of all time, and he's extremely, you know, popular in Cincinnati, but I think it just helps that Pete, amongst the things you just mentioned, being a blue-collar guy, you know, just playing to win and, you know, doing things like bowling over Fosse in an All-Star game in Cincinnati, but being a Cincinnati native, it was important to us. You know, we're very proud here. The first professional baseball team, our opening days are ridiculously awesome. But, you know, it's like a holiday for us. So having our native son be a part of that team is so much more the icing on the cake. So.
If you have a lump in your throat, you're only human. And it's two balls, one strike on Rose. Everybody on their feet here in Cincinnati and a worldwide television audience watching these moments tonight here at Riverfront Stadium.
And the climax of this film occurs with the events that took place on September 11, 1985 at Riverfront Stadium when Rose got hit number 4192 off the San Diego Padres' Eric Schau, passing Ty Cobb for the all-time record in that category.
2-1 pitch from Schau.
It was one of several records that Rose achieved in his long career, but certainly his most notable. Where were you for that moment, and what do you remember from watching it?
You know what's ironic about that? I was 18, and I was at Ohio State. And I can't remember, I don't think we watched it live, because we had tried to do a couple setups of a group of us guys to watch it. We were from Cincinnati up there. And, you know, we thought he was going to do it, and there was rumor that he was going to sit out and all this stuff. And the ironic part is my mother actually taped it on a Betamax machine, and I actually would not have probably been able to do this movie had she not had that Betamax tape still this many years later. And because I had just said, you happen to have that, and I found a place that did transfers, and that's how I got the actual footage of that movie, you know, of that night for the movie. But yeah, it was weird. You know, we had tried to watch it, and I ended up not seeing it live. But then we celebrated after we had heard the news about it, and everybody went wild.
For Pete Rose. This certainly his crowning achievement. And for baseball, a game that grows from its past and finds warmth in statistics, this is one of the all-time great moments.
Aside from talking with Rose, the film also featured interviews with Tony Perez, Mike Schmidt, his teammate with the Phillies from 79 to 83, as well as longtime Reds announcer Marty Brenneman. Was there anything that was said by Rose or any of the other interview subjects that really came as either a surprise or just plainly stood out to you?
You know, I think let me see how I can say this. I had no idea what Pete was going to be like in person. You know, you see a lot of things, you hear a lot of things. Obviously, every day during, you know, the last 20 years, he was, you know, pretty much being hammered about, you know, Rule 21 and everything like that. So I didn't know if he was going to be, a willing participant. I guess I knew he was going to be a willing participant, but I didn't expect him to be so funny. He's just a cracker. He loves telling stories. I was just amazed at his baseball knowledge still. I mean, being able to say, like, you know, I'm up to bat against the Mets in 74, and I have a 2-2 count. I mean, his memory is amazing. As far as the other guys, I mean, they were great. They're obviously big Pete fans. They'd like to see him get back into baseball. So they were just great. And I didn't want to spend too much time with those guys. I had about probably 28 hours with Pete, but I only had, maybe 6 hours each of those guys. And they were very gracious with their time, but I didn't want to go off track too much with those guys. So I didn't get a lot of extra fun stuff, I suppose, with those guys. But I got a lot of great gold with Pete.
Yeah, no, I can say with certainty, I can assume that Rose must have taken the film very well, as it was a chance to talk about his playing career, something he really hasn't been able to do much of, as we touched on. He hasn't been able to do much of that in a while, albeit for self-inflicted reasons. But nonetheless, it was really an opportunity to shed light on an amazing playing career that has really been overshadowed lately.
Yeah, I think that was, a lot of the reason we heard about it. I can tell you a little story about that. Like I said earlier, I had done a basketball documentary, the Great Hoosiers of Kentucky story here that I did a documentary on. And a friend of mine, we were at a local pub here in Cincinnati, and he asked me, "Well, what are you going to work on next?" And I said, "Well, I feel confident. I think I'd like to try to tell Pete's story only in playing career." And he said, "Hang on a minute." He got on the phone, and he ended up calling one of Pete's managers. And within 20 minutes, Pete knew about the project. And he was curious enough because he said, "Hey, you're from Cincinnati. I'd like to hear what you have in mind." And probably within 2 weeks, we had him up, and there was a hit king sitting in my office. So that was pretty surreal. But I think that was a big deal for him. He just loved talking about the game. I mean, he knows so much about baseball. He still texts current players. They're asking him advice, and they're texting back and forth between each other about, like, what did you see there in my hitting mechanics and things. So, he loves the game. I'll just say that.
Even though the documentary doesn't touch on his gambling and his banishment from the game in 1989, which occurred while he was the Reds' manager, was there still an understanding at the time, and looking back today, that the punishment handed down by then-Commissioner Bart Giamatti was deserved?
You know, I talked a little bit about him with him. I had done the research if I could have done a gambling doc, or if I think he might be willing now if I ever decided to get the money together and say this is part two. So I own the Dowd report, and I did some research on that, and I did ask him, and he did say that I think Giamatti and him, as part of him, his deal of accepting the banishment, there was that part that said, "Hey, and we'll revisit your case for reinstatement in a year." And I think that's basically why Pete, admitted it then, or at least took the lifetime banishment, didn't really admit it until years later. But it was part of a deal that he would be revisited in a year, and then obviously Mr. Giamatti passed away 8 days later. And then Faye Benson said, well, whatever deal you struck with Bart is, it's not, it has nothing to do with me. I'm the new commissioner, and this is it. So that's the way I understand it to be.
Well, Rose was banned from baseball back in 1989, and with a new commissioner leading Major League Baseball, he has a new hope that something could change. For decades, Rose tried to work with former Commissioner Bud Selig, but he made little progress. He applied for reinstatement in 1997, and 5 years later, he met with Selig, who never ruled on the application. After his latest request, new MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred said he will meet with Pete at some point in the future.
In vying for reinstatement into baseball, Rose had talked with not only Faye Vincent, but his successor, Bud Selig, but was met mostly with resistance. Now, new commissioner Rob Manfred, very shortly after taking the position, has talked openly about wanting to meet with Rose. Do you feel this change in leadership will ultimately result in Pete at least becoming eligible for the Hall of Fame?
You know, from everything I can see from my vantage point, we have a bit of a stake in the game because I think that people will want to see the movie hopefully more and be open to it. If Pete gets reinstated, if baseball, you know, feels like it's time, he's paid his dues. And I think Rob Manfred is very open to that. It sounds like he's, you know, he doesn't have a good or a bad vibe necessarily about Pete. He's willing to talk. Which is probably the closest, I think, that Pete's, you know, his opportunities for this is coming about because of this, the new commissioner, yeah.
If he does, in fact, become eligible for the Hall of Fame, which in my opinion would certainly be a long time coming after more than a quarter century in baseball purgatory, do you see it as somewhat of an opening of the floodgates for him in terms of how we view his career as a whole? What I mean by that is, do you see his life story becoming less and less about the banishment and what led to it over time and more about what he accomplished on the baseball field?
You know, I hope so. I think a lot of the thing that's helping, unfortunately for baseball, is that all the Ted users, the steroids, is really kind of showing, you know, a lot of issues that Major League Baseball, that's, in my opinion, far more serious about, quote, cheating, you know, to determine the outcome of a game. They have to deal with that, and I think that attention is being, you know, the attention being drawn away from Pete's, you know, betting on his team to win. I think that's a far different issue altogether, and I hope that in a weird way that does, you know, help people be more open-minded to learning about, you know, a 24-year career and all the, you know, I mean, you see the records at the end of the movie, what they scroll, so it's so much more than just the hits. And I just think he deserves to be, you know, people get to know more about him other than just saying, well, he's the guy that broke Rule 21.
You know, in the course of 9 minutes, three Pete Roses went in front of the people. Me getting a hit, my son come out and congratulate me and hugging me, and me thinking about my father. Three Pete Roses in 9 minutes. The guys that were really responsible for me being there is all the coaches you had and some of the teammates you had the scouts assigned you and the father and the uncle that mentored you and made you a switch batter and instilled the work ethic and the aggressiveness and all that kind of stuff. They weren't there. I could just see my dad up there just smiling at Ty Cobb and say, take that, Georgia Peach. The Buckeye just went ahead of you.